Over the holiday weekend, hackers targeted the networks of at least 1,500 businesses and organizations worldwide. They got in through IT management software Kaseya. For a $70 million Bitcoin ransom, they will unlock the compromised data. Last month, President Biden told Russian President Vladimir Putin that there would be consequences if he turned a blind eye to Russian hackers that attack U.S. cyber infrastructure. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Has your workplace been hit with a ransomware attack? Let us know what happened. Did the federal government provide any support? And if you work in IT, how is your department trying to thwart these attacks? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Eric Geller is a cybersecurity reporter at Politico, and he covers federal cyber policy issues. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, JC.
So what do we know about the hackers who are behind this recent attack?
What we know is that they are a pretty prolific ransomware gang called Revil, R-E-V-I-L. They've been responsible for a number of high-profile ransomware attacks, and they have just joined the litany of groups that have gotten quite a lot of perhaps unwanted publicity. That would also include the DarkSide gang that attacked Colonial Pipeline a few months ago. This is really the time where a lot of these groups are stepping out of the shadows and starting to make even more of a name for themselves than they already were.
So from what I've read, this Revil group, it's a Russian language group, a little unclear if they're in Eastern Europe or in Russia itself. But when we've talked about cybersecurity issues in the past, you know, we've talked about some state-sanctioned cybersecurity attacks. Insofar as we know, is this group affiliated with the Russian government, or are they just out there working on their own?
So the best information we have is that they are working on their own. There are, of course, cyber criminals who sort of moonlight and provide their services for the Russian government on some occasions. There's sort of a nexus there. But this group, like the DarkSide group, is believed to be an independent operator.
So do we have a sense as to why Kaseya was targeted specifically?
We don't know exactly what the hackers were going for. However, I will say it's a pretty great target if you want to have a lot of spillover effects, as we've seen with this attack. They basically make software that companies buy, and then those companies go to other companies and say, hey, we will manage your networks. We will protect your data. And the way we do that is by buying this software from a company called Kaseya. So what you have here is not only Kaseya itself being hacked, but the companies who buy the management software, and then any companies that contract with those companies. So there's sort of three levels of damage that you can imagine here, not too dissimilar from the SolarWinds attack. SolarWinds was also a company that sold this kind of management software. And this software has incredibly broad access to the networks that it's placed on because it needs to scan for threats. So this is some of the best software to compromise if you want to really get deep into somebody's network.
And it sounds like instead of targeting one big thing like the Colonial Pipeline, that it did have a cascading effect, that it affected businesses like grocery stores in Sweden. And I feel like I read that some schools in New Zealand were also impacted. You know, how does this kind of undercut some of our confidence in the software that we use? Because, you know, one grocery store in Sweden is not necessarily the same thing as a big target.
It's a huge challenge, and it highlights work that cybersecurity experts have been doing for years to try to increase trust in our software and create programs sort of like the Energy Star label to help companies, before they buy a piece of software, understand how safe it is. Has it been certified? Has it passed any sort of government or nonprofit testing regimes? This is an effort that President Biden has kickstarted with his executive order. He wants to create pilot programs to create some kind of cybersecurity labeling system for software. And he's going to be directing federal agencies to essentially change the language that they use for their own contracts, so that they're only going to be buying software that has gone through certain tests. And the idea there is to use the power of the federal government to change the market so that all of a sudden all kinds of companies start designing their software with security in mind because they want to be federal contractees someday. They want to get federal contracts. It's a big market. This is the only way right now without legislative action that the Biden administration can sort of weigh in here. It cannot force companies to meet security requirements except if they are doing so through federal contracts. So that's one aspect of this that we're seeing a lot of right now is an attempt to create a better understanding of what kind of code is in our software so that we can know if it's safe or not.
So this attack on Kaseya software was done, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it was done through, a patch. They were able to get into the software itself. How frequent is that a way for hackers to conduct these cyber attacks?
It does happen. It happened with SolarWinds that the hackers were able to modify a piece of the code when it went out to SolarWinds customers. So it does happen sometimes. However, I will say, especially with ransomware, the much more frequent attack vector is sending somebody malware that then locks up their computers, you know, through an email attachment or a text message attachment, for example. What we're seeing in this case is that cyber criminals are starting to use more of the tactics that we associate with really advanced hackers, government-sponsored hackers. And, you know, the Justice Department has been warning for years about this kind of blended threat of cyber crime and nation-state espionage merging. We're seeing a version of that here in terms of these criminals getting a little bit more sophisticated about how they go about their business.
We are talking to Eric Geller right now. He's a cybersecurity reporter at Politico, and he covers federal cyber policy issues. And, you know, one thing you just said was that the Justice Department has been on their radar for a while. We have now had, if it's been on the radar for a while, we've had these really significant cybersecurity attacks. You mentioned that the Biden administration has, you know, an executive order in place, but this isn't new to this administration. Why does it kind of feel like we've been a little slow to address this on a federal level?
Well, part of the problem is that the federal government is in general pretty slow to react to high tech threats, if you will, evolving threats. This is a bureaucracy and apparatus that does not have a lot of tech savvy people. Certainly across the agencies, there are very smart cybersecurity experts. But overall, a lot of the leaders and a lot of the mid-level people did not sort of come of age and enter government at a time at the current time where this is really at the forefront. This is a bureaucracy that has been slow, partly because it's just not used to these threats. The other piece of it is this is not an issue that we can solve with U.S. policy alone. A lot of these criminals are operating out of Russia. The Kremlin does not seem to have any interest in cracking down on them. And so the best thing that we can do, if we can't convince Russia to arrest these people, frankly, and oftentimes they're not breaking Russian laws, so Vladimir Putin doesn't have that much of a reason to arrest them. If we can't do that, all we can do is focus on increasing the resilience, the defensiveness of our companies. And that's a huge challenge because the government has been very reluctant to regulate the security of private companies, at least the cybersecurity of them. And so what we're left with is kind of the voluntary approach. Please upgrade. Please patch your systems. Please use a strong password. All these kinds of things that you and I understand are important. But companies are first and foremost focused on profit. And it's been a long slog to get boards of directors to understand that this could be a really important issue for them and that, you know, they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect their company, if for no other reason than for the sake of their share price.
Right now, we continue our talk with Eric Geller. He covers cybersecurity for Politico, and we are talking about the rise in ransomware attacks and what solutions we could see on the horizon from the federal government working with private companies. You can join the conversation right now by calling 800-642-1234. Now, before we took a break, we were talking about how, you know, in Russia, what some of these cybersecurity hackers do isn't against the law, and that, you know, moving forward, we might need maybe a diplomatic approach to dealing with this on an international level. Do you think we could see something from Washington, D.C., where we work more closely with other governments to prevent attacks like this?
Yeah, certainly that's something that top Biden officials have stressed, especially in the past few days, is they want to work with other countries to put pressure on especially the companies that run these cryptocurrency exchanges, these virtual currency websites. And hackers often, almost always, ask for ransoms in, you know, Bitcoin or another type of cryptocurrency. And that money, just like, you know, American dollars, has to transfer through some kind of institution. And so you have these cryptocurrency companies, these exchanges that facilitate these payments, not necessarily willingly, but they certainly could be doing more to crack down on them. And what President Biden has said is we're going to ask our allies to mount a concerted effort to get these companies to do more, to know what, you know, what entities are using their platforms. There's this concept called know your customer, which is basically saying if you facilitate financial transactions, you need to make sure that criminals, terrorists are not using your website for that purpose. Right now, we haven't really seen a lot of companies lean hard into that concept, but it's possible that as more international pressure is applied, that we might start to see some of that.
So at least 17 countries have been affected. This Revel group is asking for $70 million in cryptocurrency, like you just mentioned. And it seems like cryptocurrency is becoming the ransom, the currency of choice for many of these hackers. You know, why cryptocurrency?
Well, it is harder to track. It involves more technology that can obfuscate, you know, where the money is going. I mean, one of the wonders of cryptocurrency is supposed to be that it is built on this platform that lets you see all the transactions. You know, there's this digital sort of ledger that you can use to follow the money. But it's hard to follow exactly where the money is going and the exact increments in which it is flowing. And it's also hard to intercept it, again, unless you have the participation of the cryptocurrency exchange, because you've got these passwords that people use for their accounts. They've got these keys that only they know. And unless the company has a way to intercept that money, it's not like, you know, working with a major, you know, U.S. regulated bank, for example, where they've been dealing with money laundering for a very long time and they have systems in place to intercept money and return it if it's stolen. The cryptocurrency exchanges, you know, by comparison, are kind of the Wild West. And so that is why it's an attractive platform for criminals.
And as part of the ransom, Revel is asking for that Bitcoin ransom, $70 million in Bitcoin. And what they're going to hand over is a decryptor key. Can you explain what that is for people who might not be familiar?
Yeah, so a decryptor key is essentially the magic solution to unlock your files and let you use them again. So the ransomware attack involves scrambling your files so that they're all gibberish. You can't access them. And the hacker group will create a tool that undoes that process. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We saw with Colonial that it actually didn't fully work, and they had to restore some of their data by using versions of the files that they had backed up themselves. Sometimes security experts are able to actually design their own tools so they can provide those to companies that have not yet paid, and they can say, here you go, you can unlock your files with this. But this is basically what the hackers are holding out as the magic solution. Pay us and you can have your files back by running this piece of software.
We are talking to Eric Geller right now, cybersecurity reporter at Politico. And I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Mike in Brookfield. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm just curious why this wouldn't be a very good place to create a department within the Department of Defense where the budgetary needs for something like this, because on a mass scale that this would cost to basically defend, would have to be something almost like a Department of Defense budgetary item. And then the budget, you know, that, or then the Defense Department has so many ties to places like the CIA and the FBI and different agencies throughout the government. That just seems like creating a cybersecurity defense force would make practical sense and would have the budgetary earmarks pretty much, I would imagine, sail through Congress in order to fund a program like this.
Mike, thank you so much for that that call and that question. What are your thoughts, Eric?
Well, part of the challenge here is that, you know, cyber attacks are very different from other kinds of attacks that the military is structured to defend us against, in that there's just a blizzard of them happening at all times. So it's hard for me to imagine a part of the military, a defense force that is structured to actually protect businesses on an ongoing basis. We do have inside the military U.S. Cyber Command, which is responsible for protecting the military's own networks and also for conducting what most people would colloquially call cyber war. But there's really no capacity within the federal government to actually provide the kind of digital defense on a regular basis that we imagine the military providing in the physical world, or that we imagine, you know, police or the FBI providing in the physical world. You know, another part of that is a lot of what the federal government does on cybersecurity happens after the fact. DHS does a lot to provide guidance so that businesses can protect themselves and not get hacked. But a lot of the resources go towards, after there's an attack, going in and helping you recover your data, helping you figure out who hacked you. It's not clear to me or to a lot of the experts that I talk to that you could build a program to actually do that proactively for the entire private sector.
Do you think we could start seeing some more of that? I don't want to call it proactive at this point, but do you think that this could really light a fire under people to develop better systems, develop better practices to make sure that we can stop some of these attacks before they start?
I do think that, especially with the actions that President Biden has mandated in his executive order about applying the absolute lowest hanging fruit, stronger passwords, moving to building your computer networks through something called zero trust, which means you assume that people are already on your network and you try to design everything so that they have a hard time jumping from one computer to another. These basic ideas that experts have been recommending for years, once more federal agencies start doing those things, it's going to trickle out to the private sector. We're already seeing, of course, many businesses, especially large ones, are already doing these things. But the question is, how do you get it to the level of the small or medium-sized business? And how do you get it to someone like SolarWinds or Kaseya, which may be a large company, maybe an incredibly important company, but is not a famous company? It's not getting a lot of public pressure to be secure. It's kind of in the background, and we don't hear about it until something like this happens. How do you get that kind of company to proactively pay attention to security? I think it starts to happen when the federal government takes it more seriously on its own.
Now, you cover cybersecurity policy for Politico. We've been talking about kind of these independent actors or organizations that are taking part in these cybersecurity attacks. But we also touched a little bit on the fact that there are state-sanctioned groups that participate in cyber attacks. How do you see policy evolving moving forward to deal with those that state-sanctioned work that I also know that the United States is also doing to some degree?
Yeah, that's harder to prevent because, you know, we can't say, you know, Russia, China, you need to stop spying on us. You need to stop hacking our defense contractors and our federal agencies to gain information about us, because we, of course, do that too. So we have some moral authority with respect to ransomware, you know, criminal groups. We don't really have any way to push for an international consensus against a SolarWinds type of attack, where that was largely aimed at infiltrating federal networks and spying on specific federal officials. We do that kind of thing all the time. That's really an area where, if we want to stop that, we can't tell Russia that they have to stop doing it. We just have to make it harder for them to succeed. And that goes back to the basics that I talked about earlier.
And in our last minute or so, what will you be watching for as, you know, this story continues to unfold? But also, what are you just keeping your eyes on in the future?
So the biggest thing is Congress going to require companies to alert the government when they've been hacked? The federal government does not know about a lot of hacks, and DHS says that makes it harder for them to protect the country. So there's some House and Senate legislation being drafted right now, and I'll be curious to see if that gets enough support to pass.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Eric Geller is a cybersecurity reporter for Politico, and he covers federal cyber policy issues, and he broke down what we know about the latest global cybersecurity attack, that one that hit a private company. They exploited a patchwork in their code and really disrupted about 1,500 businesses across the globe.